So this paper builds on some of our previous work where we have looked at the nutritional content of food advertising seen by children on television. Before I begin, I'd like to say that I myself and my co-authors on this paper have no relationships to disclose. So just a little background in order to set the stage in terms of advertising and children. Some background on the amount of advertising that's directed to children. Among 44 major food and beverage advertisers, they spend about $1.6 billion to promote their products to children and adolescents in the U.S. In 2006. When we get the new results that are due to come out probably shortly after the election, or at the latest, hopefully in early 2013, we will get the numbers that are presently being looked at for 2009. Television remains the primary channel for delivery of advertising to children. Of course, we know that digital media represents an extensive amount of advertising in itself, but TV is still the main outlet. And that's really because also children watch about 3.5 hours of television every day on average. In 2009, kids 2 to 5 and 6 to 11 saw roughly 4,000 or just over 4,000 food-related ads on television per year. And I'm not going to be talking about 2011 data, but I will tell you that we are just analyzing those data. And while there was a downward trend between 2003 and 2009, the numbers have started to bump back up in 2011. So just in terms of a little bit of background, I'm an economist, so we sort of think about the fact, well, why is this advertising going on? And it's really to complement individuals' consumption sort of utility, their happiness that they get. So if they see advertising, it might normalize a behavior. They see a lot of fast food ads, they'll think all kids are doing this, so it's great to do it. Or they associate fun, there's products, toys associated with it. And over time, he sort of thought that there were those different levels, perhaps, of a way that you would reach children. But now it's really thought that the information or this appeal that's directed at children, it's really sort of flat, it's horizontal. They just sort of go at kids from directly all on one level. So if there's a cartoon, it goes at the kid. If there is something that's normalizing, it sort of goes at the kid. It's not really that the child is processing this in a hierarchical fashion. And adolescents themselves have often been thought to sort of been exempt from why we might want to consider as a group of individuals from sort of regulation or self-regulation, but really it's been shown that they actually don't have the cognitive abilities to interpret the advertising that's being bombarded at them. So in terms of background, I think many people are probably familiar with the IOM report that found that food advertising affects children's purchase requests, sort of that nag factor to the parents, that there's evidence that it affects short-term consumption patterns, but and that IOM report actually did also state that there was some evidence that it affects weight outcomes, but in the studies up to that point, they really didn't separate out the effect of television watching in itself vis-a-vis the advertising effects, because when you're watching television, you're sedentary, so that can contribute to weight gain. You may be snacking while you're watching television, that can contribute. And then you're seeing ads, so there's multiple facets. However, recent work has shown, and also some of that work by colleagues here today, that in terms of looking at fast food consumption, that there has been holding constant the amount of time you watch TV, that the ads themselves do affect weight outcomes and consumption. So just a little bit of background in terms of, well, what are we doing about this on the policy front? The CFBAI, which is the Children's Food and Beverage Advertising Initiative, was set up in 2006 with 10 companies. And at the time, these companies pledged to advertise, quote unquote, better for you products to children. And they used a whole host of different what is called child-directed television. It ranged, some said 20% child audience, some said 50% child audience. So one recent change is that all of the companies now are defining child-directed audience as, in terms of television, is where the program has 35% or greater child audience. Three of the companies have pledged not to engage in any child-directed advertising. And in our previous work, we'd found that 88% of the ads seen by children were for products high in saturated fat, sugar, or sodium. And those were based on National Academy of Science nutritional definitions. The CFBAI nutritional definitions are made by each company. So they're really self-defined. However, and they were defined so very differently across the different companies. However, starting at the end of next year, so actually the beginning of 2014, there will be a uniform set of nutritional criteria that are going to be used by CFBAI members, which as of today now consists of 16 companies. So in this study, what we've done is in our previous work, we looked at all of the ads that kids see. So it didn't matter whether they saw it on American Idol, which had much less than 35% child audience, or whether they saw it on a heavily watched show by children. Because one of the criticisms that we had by the Better Business Bureau was that when our last study came out last summer, they said, oh, well, you found such a high percentage of unhealthy food products because you were looking at exposure from all ads, and our pledge only applies to child-directed television. So I thought, okay, fair enough. What we'll do then is we will apply nutritional standards or content analysis only to those programs as a foreshadow to tell you what we found. We actually found, as you're going to see, it actually is worse on the child programming. So I'm not sure what response we're going to get this time. You're seeing new results, and we actually are just about to submit this to a journal. The other thing that we did differently, so we use National Academy of Science nutritional information in terms of standards. And in this instance, we have used the IWG nutritional standards that were released for comment. So the interagency work group put together, it was a number of different agencies at the federal level, and they put together a voluntary set of principles really to help guide industry. It was drafted and released for comment in April of 2011, and since then has not moved forward and has been sitting at Congress and has not been able to move forward. So in terms of these, just a quick table, I won't really go through all of this, but what we did was quite simply, we just operationalized the four categories for which the IWG suggested these items really need to be consumed in limits. Okay, these are nutrients that must be limited. There was another set of principles of nutrients to encourage, but it was too difficult in terms of getting the nutritional information for those. So if you want to think about this, this is actually sort of a lower end threshold, because we're actually not requiring these items to have the nutrients to encourage. So saturated fat, trans fat, sugars, and sodium are the four categories. Each of these are weighted by the exposure, which I'm going to talk about in just a second. So the advertising data, these are targeted rating points from Nielsen Media Research. And what the ratings points do is that they actually tell you for a given program how many kids are watching that program. So if there's the age now of television 24/7, if there's a program on Nickelodeon at midnight and no kids are watching it, I actually don't really care if they're advertising something that's sugar-laden if no kid is actually seeing that ad. So what we care about is what are the ads that kids are really being exposed to, and that these ratings are exactly what companies use to figure out where to place their ads and how much they cost, because shows that are heavily rated cost more money to purchase ad space on those shows. So we weight all of the nutritional information for each product by the ratings in order to get a weighted exposure measure. So for 2009, we had separate ratings for kids 2 to 5 and 6 to 11. And we looked at exposure from all programming, 20% child audience, which I won't really talk about today, and 35% child audience, which is the new measure that's being used consistently by the CFBAI. We looked at products by cereal, categorized by cereal, sweets, snacks, beverages, and other food, and then two restaurant categories, fast food and full service. And we do not look at the nutritional content in the restaurant categories, one, because Jen Harris has already done an extensive amount of work on that, and two, because it's actually a lot of times, especially for the full-service restaurants, you don't actually have one product. It might just be an ad for the company, so you don't have a menu product. So just to give you an idea of the extent of all advertising, kids see about 11 ads, 2 to 5-year-olds, and almost 13 ads, 6 to 11-year-olds. And on the child audience programming, just under half of those ads. So that means that half of the exposure that kids get is from non-child-directed advertising. So if the pledges are only applying to child-directed advertising, we're missing out in self-regulation on half of the ads that kids are seeing. So, and this varies. Of course, cereal, you can see a lot more of that comes on child-directed. And whereas on other areas, actually surprisingly, say beverages, and actually surprisingly sweets, they see very little of that on child-directed advertising. So this is just to give you an idea of how it differs by food category. It's pretty similar. The patterns are often similar for the 6 to 11-year-olds. So just to give you an idea, a lot of numbers, so just focus on the yellow highlights, but just to give you an idea of what percentage of the ads are high in saturated fat. So the ones that are the highest are the snack products, and then our catch-all combination of others. Trans fats didn't highlight anything because most of the products are not high in trans fats. Sugar, 99.7% of cereal ads seen by 2 to 5-year-olds on child-directed advertising are high in sugar. So pretty much every single product out there in the cereal category, which used to be the highest area, now it's fast food. But if you take out fast food, cereal ads make up the most ad seen. And then sodium, you can see snacks are quite high in sodium still, as is the other category. But cereal is also very high in sodium and would not pass the IWG. So if we put this all together and say, okay, well, in each of these categories, foods are high in one or the other. If we put them together, you can see that among all programming, 84% of products are high in nutrients to limit. On child-directed programming, 96%. So the programming to which the pledges are applying actually have poorer nutritional content than the non-child programming. We looked at companies. We are not assessing overall. We're not going to be presenting nutritional information by companies, but just in terms of who is actually advertising or reaching children, General Mills, Kellogg, and Kraft are the largest non-restaurant food advertisers. Those companies that said that they would not advertise, just to give you an example, Coca-Cola, there was only on average one ad per year. So the first take-home message is that food advertising on child-directed programming is worse. The second take-home message is that the nutritional content by those companies that are actually members of the self-regulatory group is unfortunately worse. So the CFBAI company members, 97.8% of their ads are either high in saturated fat, trans fat, sugars, or sodium, whereas only 81%, well, only, right, 81% of the non-CFBAI members are. And numbers are similar for the 6 to 11-year-old. So here it is, just to, as a picture, easier sometimes than the numbers, you can see, and the same companies then also, if you break it up by all audience versus child audience, CFBAI versus non-CFBAI, the worst actual group of those is CFBAI child audience. So I think this provides a benchmark on which we can actually assess the new pledges that are going to be going into effect. So really, this is just what I have just summed up for you. But again, worse on children's programming, 96 to 97% of food ads don't meet the IWG guidelines. What this also means is that if these guidelines were to move forward and actually help guide industry and were to be adopted, then we may see some improvement in the nutritional content of food advertising, and hopefully it would then lead to reformulation as well. So just a little bit of a summary so I can conclude and keep on time. So this is the first study that has applied the IWG guidelines to assess nutritional content, including that subset of ads seen on children's programming. And I think the results clearly demonstrate that these interagency guidelines are not being met, with more than 9 in 10 advertisements not meeting them. And the results suggest that industry self-regulation in its present form is rather limited in its effectiveness to improve food-related advertising seen by children. I think really what we can say at this point is that, well, two things in terms of the reach looking at children's programming, only half of the advertising is coming on children's programming, so we need to think about reach, and we need to think about the fact that the nutritional content is actually poor on those ads. So we need to work on both of those fronts, expanding the reach and improving the nutritional content. And we hope that this can serve as a benchmark for continued monitoring. And hopefully, as the new guidelines are implemented by CFBAI, we may see some improvements. I'd like to thank all of my colleagues and the funders, and to include a disclaimer that the views presented in this presentation and in our study are our own and do not reflect those of CDC or the NIH or RWJ. Thank you.